It's not a bad business model. Certainly a lucrative one. Low overhead, high return on investment. The two business partners in our Acts reading had it all figured out. The unnamed slave girl with the gift for fortune-telling was their cash cow. She did all the work, and they reaped all the profit. And we hear that she brought her owners a great deal of money. For whatever reason, one day this woman, whose life was one of physical and spiritual bondage, attached herself to Paul and Silas as they were preaching and teaching in Philippi. And for a number of days she followed them around, crying out, "These men are slaves of the Most High God, who proclaim to you the way of salvation." Now, at one level, there's nothing wrong with this. Paul refers to himself on multiple occasions as a slave to God. The Greek word doulos, which is sometimes erroneously translated as servant, means bond slave. And Paul uses this word very intentionally to make the point that he does not belong to himself, but to Jesus Christ alone. There were conditions in the ancient world where a slave would be indebted for a specific period of time and then released from bondage. A bond slave literally bonded himself to his master, ceding all rights and vowing to serve him even unto death. This would happen for various reasons, often because the master was kind and a certain loyalty developed. The slave didn't want to serve another master, and so in a public ceremony, he would, of his own volition, offer himself as a bond slave to his master. The decision was irreversible. "These men are slaves of the Most High God who proclaim to you a way of salvation." So being called a slave of the Most High God was an integral piece of Paul's identity. All that he was and all that he did was in service of his master, Jesus. And Paul and Silas are indeed proclaiming a way of salvation. That's the offer and promise of following Jesus Christ. Both sides of this woman's assertion, then, were accurate and true. And yet, we hear that Paul was very much annoyed by her actions. Now, in one sense, I get it. Having someone yelling the same thing over and over again while you're trying to work would get pretty old pretty fast. In what feels more like a spontaneous move of irritation than a pastoral act of healing, Paul exercises the spirit crying out within her, which has two immediate effects. It gives him finally some peace and quiet, and it cripples the profitability of her owner's business, because apparently her ability to tell fortunes was also swept away in the process of Paul's exorcism. In a way, this piece of the story, this woman's story, is merely the hook on which the rest of this stirring narrative relies. Following Paul's irritation and his driving out of the spirit, the two men whose business just collapsed accuse Paul of stirring things up and introducing strange new customs which will disrupt the natural order of civic life. That's the public charge that gets Paul and Silas flogged and thrown into prison. But really, it's all about their own self-interest and greed. Their anger at these two followers of Jesus who have interrupted their cash flow. The action-packed story continues with prison and chains and an earthquake and the conversion and baptism of the jailer and his entire household. But I want to pause and linger to reflect on this slave girl. She fades away from the narrative as quickly as she appears. We don't know her name, her circumstances, or her fate. We hear nothing of how this encounter with Paul and Silas changed her life, or even whether it did. Did her owners just get rid of her? Or did they simply find another way to exploit her? In her case, the use of the word slave was not being used metaphorically or as a form of spiritual identification. And I find it hard not to think about her situation in light of the human trafficking that exists in our own context. And make no mistake, this woman was being trafficked. The lack of dignity in treating fellow human beings as commodities transcends time and history. Nameless, faceless people being bought, sold, and exploited for human pleasure or labor. While this is an issue all over the world, there's a nonprofit that operates out of India called the Invisible Girl Project. Their mission is to combat the discrimination, killing, and trafficking of girls and women. Because of a massive gender gap, many females end up as child brides or forced into prostitution. And I mention this because I think of the woman in this story as an invisible girl. She appears briefly and then fades away. She remains invisible and exploited. And while I'd like to think her owners cast her aside when she was no longer financially useful and she found new life and purpose in a burgeoning community of Jesus followers, there's absolutely no evidence to support this. It's more probable that her owners found other ways to use her to their advantage. And so even 2,000 years later, she remains invisible. These days, such slavery happens in much less overt ways, but it remains a condition into which many of our fellow human beings find themselves. And it's not just about the famous uptick in human trafficking around major events like the Super Bowl or the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. Nor is it mostly an international phenomenon or something that takes place in communities far from our own. Human trafficking takes place right here on the South Shore. This spring, the owners of a day spa in Norwell were charged with human trafficking in connection with a prostitution ring, and they were arraigned right up the street in Hingham District Court. A couple of years ago, a human sex trafficking ring was busted in the Boston area, and one of the keys to the entire operation was in Braintree. Last year, another one was exposed, and again, Braintree played a major role. This isn't to pick on Braintree, but I started wondering why that town kept popping up. And I discovered that when it comes to human trafficking, Braintree is the perfect location. It's convenient to highways, think Braintree Split, and it's in close proximity to a major city and other high population density areas. In addition, you need anonymous pickup and drop-off locations in mall parking lots fit the bill perfectly. The point is, this sin of invisibility is happening right in our midst, which is why it's so important to shine the light of truth in hard-to-reach places. And we can't do that unless we're even aware that such degradation and abuse is taking place. Yes, law enforcement is focusing on this issue. The Attorney General's office is prosecuting those involved in trafficking. There are resources out there for survivors. But where are we in all of this? What can we do? Keep your eyes open. Share the stories of those who are or who formerly were invisible. And remember that complicity is often shrouded in the cloak of invisibility. Slavery isn't something relegated to history books. It is alive and well and thriving in our own day. If we identify ourselves as slaves to Christ, we can't help but do all we can to see those who remain invisible.